say you were part of Elton John's choir to me.
I work with Elton John. So he doesn't have a choir. He has a vocal team, and this is a very small vocal team. And so, yeah, when he is around, I have the pleasure of being able to record things with him, which...
Wow.
I've recorded lots of different things with him that I can't tell you what they are, apart from the ones which are already out.
What, as in there's stuff that just doesn't get used, or it gets used in a different way and you can't hear yourself on there?
They get used in a different way.
Yeah.
Or they are going to be used, but in the future.
Right.
And so those projects haven't come out yet, or they haven't been announced, or whatever else. But yeah, what I did do, and that is out, is I did the Lion King soundtrack with him, and there's a track on there called Never Too Late, which is, you know, it's obviously a new live action version. And on his track, the female vocal that you can hear running through and doing ad libs and stuff, that's me. So that was, you know, that was amazing, because I wasn't expecting him to be in the studio. He was in the studio for that. And he is in person. He's as fabulous as you would expect. He was wearing, and I'll always remember it because he was wearing as kind of a rhinestone kind of sequined, kind of tracksuit. And down the sides of it, it says Elton times Gucci. So it was specifically for him, which is amazing. And yeah, he was in the studio for that recording. So basically went in there, learned that on the day, on the spot, learned the song. Because this was obviously quite a while before it ever came out. Did that. And then it was a case of, right, we need one of the female vocals to do the ad-libs and all the rest of it. And basically the other girls kind of turned around and said, bim. And he was like, good, go in the studio and I want you to let rip. Whatever you want to do, we do. I was like, cool. So got in there, did a couple of runs of that. And then Elton John himself gave me a round of applause. And I was like, yes, I've made it. I've made it, everybody.
It's interesting. People like that, of that profile, it must be in your head a little bit as you're kind of performing in front of them, I guess. And I wonder, apart from that feedback of clapping, like, which ways did he give you feedback? Like, was that it? Or did he kind of, you know, were there any changes he wanted you to make, and how did he communicate himself in that way?
I think we've been doing stuff for him before that. So what normally happens is that he's very specific about instructions. He said he would like it to sound like that. He wants that kind, you know, he needs it to be warm in this way, push more on this. This is what he's thinking of. So he's always very vocal, gives the instructions, and then we go and do what's been required. In this case, it was more, he was like, I want it to be, we listened to the track, obviously, so we knew the style of the track and where it was going. But it was kind of like, I need you to kind of just let rip, really. I want it to be as natural as possible. And he kind of gave a very short instruction at the beginning. It was more kind of, but do what you would naturally do. Whatever you're hearing, we will pick out from that what we think specifically sits and works together, but do whatever you would naturally do. Kind of trusted me to do that. And the team I was working with, they were like, okay, you're the right person to do this. So that's what I did. I kind of did the stuff and he was like, right, amazing. Once it was done, it was amazing. Clap, great. He didn't give me any extra notes. Didn't want it done again. He was happy.
Nice.
So it was, yeah. That's really kind of what you want, really. It's great when you get lots of notes and feedback and then you go in again, because you always want to get it right. But if you're able to kind of crack it first time, second time, then yeah, you're like, you're golden. That's the best.
Hey, this is Jess Greenfield from Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, and you're listening to the Stage Left podcast.
touring isn't built for women. And that's just the truth. It's not built for women in some ways, in a very practical sense. So for instance, and you know, if you're, I don't know, if some people are squeamish, I mean, it is just a normal part of life. But for instance, the toilets in tour buses are too high for average height woman. If you're taller, then that's amazing. I wasn't blessed with the longest of legs, so I am only 5'4" and a half.
I'm 5'6". I hear you.
Yeah. So, in the normal context, the toilet is too high. For the positioning that a woman would need to use the bathroom. Also, the idea, you know, most people know, if they don't know, then on a tour bus, you're not allowed to do number twos. Mm. That's fine. But also, it means that, you know, the only thing, you can't flush tissue down the toilet. Fine. There is a dustbin usually which is on the side. Now, what happens if you're a woman on your period?
Yep.
Where do you get rid of those things that you need to get rid of without being extremely embarrassed? So there's some contexts that it was just never thought of. It was never, and it still isn't really, it's not really kind of, I don't know if it's really put into context, unless the tour manager is very, very on the ball when it comes to taking care of female members of crew, female members of the band. It can sometimes be a little bit of a difficult thing to tour. Touring, obviously, you get on the bus and you're all on the bus, and you're going to drop in some random city and you're going to shower and all the rest of it at the venue. And for women, that's not always the easiest. Depending if you have enough showers, if you have enough, you know, privacy can be an issue.
Really?
You're always at this point in time, and it's changing, but you're always going to be outnumbered. So making sure that there is a context for you to be able to have a separate shower or a separate area for you to be able to change, or for you to have, you know, somewhere where you can sit down and do the makeup that you need to do. Or, you know, obviously, like some people have changes mid-show. You know, is there a context that you can do that? I'm, you know, for the most part, I think most of us are quite, we're used to having to change with a few people around us because, you know, if you've been doing choral work or if you've been doing shows, that is a part of it. So you are not always so precious about people putting a mic down your back. You know, I don't have an issue asking any of the guys in the crew, can you just put the mic down back, help me to just hook this up and so on. But obviously you don't want to be overexposed. And that can be an issue. You don't want half the crew to see you naked. Who does? Those are issues that have to be taken into context. And sometimes they're not timings for you getting ready as opposed to the men in the crew getting ready. I'm always going to need the extra time for the makeup. I'm always going to need the extra time to dress up. It's just the nature of these things. Sometimes that's not factored in. You know, I've had where people have said, they've kind of just flipped everything and said, you've got 8 minutes to get ready. I've had that happen to me before. You've got 8 minutes. And it's like, okay, yeah, if I was just putting on a t-shirt and a pair of trousers and you didn't want hair or makeup or you didn't want me to look a certain way, that would fly. But a lot of the time they want to have that very feminine look at the same time as you're giving you the time to achieve that. So there is that context. But in a greater context, there are tweaks and there are changes that could be made to make female musicians' lives a lot easier. But it's the same context as the rest of the world. The working world isn't built in a general context for women to be able to have the same kind of career that men can have, uninterrupted. Simply by the fact that if you choose to have children, you're going to be the one who has to carry them. And so there will need to be that extra care and extra time taken for people to kind of make it an equal playing field for people both before, if they choose to have children, and after. and also to not see people who have children as, you know, see that as a weakness on their part, where, you know, they can be easily replaced, or maybe, you know, assuming, which happens a lot for women, assuming that you can't do certain things, or assuming that, okay, now that this woman has had children, then she won't want to go on a tour, or she's not able to go to rehearsal at a certain time. Just giving her the respect as a professional that you should check those things, and then actually maybe make a way for her to be able to come to those things or do those things, so that you can get the benefit of her talent. Because the talent doesn't disappear just because people have had children, or because they have a family, or they choose to have a certain life. So,
the answer for me is inclusive design, right? So the issue is here is when you talk about like a toilet in the bus and that kind of thing, it's probably because there wasn't a woman around the table when they were designing that tour bus, right? And so the point is that when you're designing, and even when it comes to tour design and that kind of thing, it's like, oh, actually, it might take this person a bit longer, or if it's a mother, she might need to be away at different times. So actually getting those people at the embryonic stages of the design process of whatever it is to chip in and feed into that, then you get that's the ripple effect. So it's getting the right people around the table at the right time in the beginning. And yeah, I think it's such an interesting, honestly, I could talk about it for hours. It's such an interesting discussion. And being a parent, you know, when I came out to the Madrid gig where I met you, like my daughter was nearly 2 years old, and I came out for one night, and that seemed like such a massive, huge thing to both me and my partner, that I was going abroad just for a gig and then to come back the next day. And so obviously, like, now seeing like other friends of us, you know, who you know, people we know, to, you know, mutually, who've got kids and they're traveling and that kind of thing for long periods, like the ripple effect is so difficult. And I don't quite know what the answer is, but I definitely know that it's hard, you know, it's very, very hard work. And, you know, there are some sacrifices you have to make.
Yeah, I think it's difficult. I think it's difficult for if it's either partner, you know, if you're going to be going away, it's just that, you know, if you're going to be going away for a period of time, there's obviously pressure on the other person who is at home to take care of that and to double up. And, you know, obviously that can put pressure on people's relationships and put on home life, etc. And just even in a very basic context, people miss each other. And if you are in a couple where that person can maybe come out and see you on tour, then that's great. But when you put children into the mix of that, then obviously it's difficult for people to do that. So some of that flexibility kind of disappears. And I think that can be quite difficult. But I also think in terms of with women, there is that other thing that runs through where people will ask you questions and deal with you in a different manner than they do with men on tour. So I've never heard anybody ask a man who's on tour, who has children, who's looking after the children. I've never heard anybody ask that. The assumption is that the mother is taking care of the children. Nobody ever figures to themselves that maybe she has a whole life and a whole job. They don't do that. But I know that people always ask women, if they hear that they have children, they always ask, who's looking after the children? So how do you balance it? They never ask the men, how do they balance it? So it all goes back to that thing where the onus is always on women to make the concessions, to be the one balancing, to be the one figuring things out in context, as well as working wherever they're working and be, you know, this idea of doing it all. But then also at the same time, one of the reasons why many women don't really want to talk about their home life is because the moment that gets injected into the conversation, people make so many assumptions, and it affects the jobs that you get. It affects what people think you can do. But it's the same thing. It's the same context as, you know, people asking women how old they are or wanting to know, you know, all of those things affect women differently. And that is not something that, you know, I'm really beating a drum about. I think it needs to change. And in my way, I am doing my bit, as I'm sure other women are. But it is the reality. There are factors that go into the work that we do that do not affect men in the same way. And we have to navigate a completely different path around those things in order to protect ourselves and our careers and actually protect the longevity of our careers. It's an extra burden, but it is what it is at this point. Until it changes, it is what it is. And we will deal with it. It's fine.
Thank you for sharing. So interesting. Thank you for sharing that. So what we're going to do in a moment is we're going to bring in our emerging artist, who is going to be Seb, who is the producer of the podcast. So we're going to bring him in a minute, just ask a couple of last quick questions from an emerging artist perspective. But what's next for you? So what you got lined up this year? As you're doing some writing straight after this, what you got lined up for the year?
This year, it's concentrating more on writing, concentrating more on producing, concentrating more on my musicianship. And that is going to be a big thing for me this year. I'm sure that there will be more touring and more traveling. There definitely will be that. And that's all in the works. I will be releasing more music as a solo artist. So I'll be doing that, and I want to get out as much music in that context as possible. But also it's really, I think it's about strengthening my position in the things that I do now and getting as good at those things as I possibly can to then kind of propel myself into some directions that I know that I really want to work in the next couple of years. So this year is really about solidifying that. And I'm just becoming as good as I possibly can so that I can be even better in that context. Yeah.
Nice. So we're going to bring in our emerging artist, Sebastian Hughes. He's a musician based in Melbourne, kind of really making a name for themselves, with quite innovative blend of guitar and synthesizers. And, you know, quite influenced by the likes of, you know, Gorillaz and Prince, and been playing shows in Melbourne and recording in the UK as well. If you'd like to come in, Bastian, what questions do you have? Or maybe time for maybe 2 to 3 questions for Bim before she shoots off.
Perfect. No, that's fine. Thanks again for the chat as well. Like, this is honestly, like, genuinely, like, been one of my favorite chats to listen to. Like, I feel like you have amazing stories on the road. So just like, thank you. That was really fun. I've got a whole bunch, but I think something I've been thinking about was, like, I was having a good chat with my cousin about, like, an authentic sort of voice, and he said a comment to me about, like, you don't sound real enough or something, you know, and I've sung for my whole life.
And
so I'm kind of wondering, like, even if you have sung for a long time, like, how can I find my own voice as a singer? Or am I overthinking the process? Like,
I think it's possible that you could be overthinking the process. I kind of feel like, how do you sing when you're at your most relaxed? How do you sing when you are at your most at rest? Like, when you're just by yourself with your instrument and you just feel like putting something down, how do you sound then? Because I think that probably is your most authentic voice, when there's no, when you're not thinking about what other people are thinking about, when you are just enjoying, when you're like seated right in the moment and you're just enjoying singing what you're singing. Like, when you're singing your favorite song, whether that's one of your favorites that you've written or when it's one of your favorite songs that you love, how does that vocal come across? I guess it's kind of like, you know, when there's like, when you're kind of abandoned, when you just like let it go, what do you sound 100%. Like then?
When I'm in my
car. And I think that's your voice. I think that's your voice. Everything else you can embellish and do whatever else with it. But when you don't, when you're free from whatever you're thinking, other people think that, you know, the comments or whatever else, and you are just relaxed, that's what you sound like. And I feel like whenever you're recording or whenever you're doing your work or you're writing, you should be trying to get back to that. It should be in that context that you do it, because you then you always sound true. You'll always sound authentic. Yeah. And I think being authentic changes. Like, it can be authentic for that moment, you know, so it might not be what you sound like all the time, but it can definitely be authentic in that second. And that's valid.
It's really cool. I think that, you know, I've been doing this for a while, but I feel like this sort of mental stuff with this kind of like being relaxed, all those kinds of things, and actually how important they are above, you know, the volume of the inner mix or the different, you know, like all that kind of stuff. It's really cool. It's kind of like the path is actually simpler than I think a lot of people think at the start. And so it's cool just to kind of get that affirmed by someone with experience like you. I was kind of wondering, do you have any regrets yourself, or have you heard of any people's regrets with like the way that you managed and cared for your voice when you were younger? Is like anything you would have done differently, you know, to where you are now? Could have made it stronger. I don't know. Like,
I wish I knew more about voice care when I was younger, or when I was earlier on in my career, I guess. I wish I had more knowledge about it, and also took it more seriously, I guess. Because I think sometimes, especially if you're a singer, well, yeah, as a vocalist, the instrument is you. And so you sometimes are not as concerned about looking after it as sometimes you should be. Now, I'm not saying that you can't enjoy your life, but the reality is that if a guitarist is super tired, yes, he might not be 100% on stage, but the muscle memory will kick in. So he'll be able to still play, and he'll still be able to carry that show. You as a vocalist, if you're super tired, everybody's going to know about it. The notes will not be as clean, they won't be as clear, et cetera, et cetera. And I think I didn't realize how much certain things affect me in terms of, I think we call it vocal hygiene. Sleep, you know, like really basic things are super important. And so you can have a good time, but really basic things like sleep, drinking enough water, not talking too much just before a show. I think I would have concentrated on just getting those, you know, doing more of those basics. And I think I would have had better experiences in some contexts. But I don't really think
more
I have
habits and stuff.
Yeah, habits, just very basic habits, and just having those things in place so that even if you have a very late night or whatever else, because you've had the context of a week of looking after yourself in general, on that night when you've had it doesn't affect you as badly as it would do if you just didn't do the basic work. Having those habits in place protects you for the long haul, basically. And doing that as early as possible will mean that your voice, the quality of your voice, will last way beyond what the average person does. It's just,
Is it still easy for you? Like, has it become kind of reflex to where it's like, it's not a chore to do all that stuff? You kind of just, you do it without thinking.
For me, it's not a chore. I enjoy doing that because I know what the end result is. I know that if I do that, then I'll be more relaxed. If I do that, I'll be more prepared. I'll have a better show. I'll like it more. Even if I'm not thinking of the audience, I will be happier.
It affects the mental and all that kind of stuff for sure.
Yeah, you're not thinking about lots of different things. So it's you're much happier when you've done those things. That's me personally.
I don't know if you've heard of... No, 100%. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's stuff I'd like to implement more and just, you know, be more routine with it all. I can talk about this off camera stuff. I'll send you a message. But the I had really interesting experiences learning the Estill technique. I don't know if you've heard much about Estill. It's like a
I have heard of that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, if you know of any great teachers in the UK, let me know, because when I move over that way, I'm going to like need to find a good teacher of that, because that blew my mind. Like all the like vocal mechanics stuff, and I was like, literally, like if you're tense around there, it's going to like affect the sound. So if you're stressed, it's like affecting the chords.
Yeah. 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 All of that. Oh yeah. But, all of that stuff. Yeah. All of that stuff really does affect you. Your mental state does affect you. Being tired, being stressed, all of that goes straight into your throat, which is so annoying for a vocalist. It's very annoying because you're just like, I just want to get on with things. But yeah, everything 100%. Else does. I think you just have to think of your, you have to think of your voice as being like an open plan house. You know, you're not in, you don't have the context of someone who has a house of all the doors, you know, so it's not whatever happens in the kitchen and you just shut that door and it won't affect what's happening in the bathroom. Your vocals are not like that. Your vocals are an open plan house. Whatever happens in the bathroom affects what happens in the kitchen, which affects what happens in the front room. So, you know, if you're over there in the front room having, if you're in the kitchen, drinking loads, and then you're in the balcony smoking loads, I can guarantee you when you get into the studio at the back of the house, it's going to catch up with you. So like, if you think of it as an open plan house, then you can kind of, you buffer it.
Yeah, so Bim, also the chorus of OTR, it's very memorable and stands out in the song. Could you like, I don't know, share more about your approach to harmony and how you incorporated that sort of vibrato tremolo sort of sound of that vocal to create such a distinct and striking sound in that chorus?
When I was thinking, I'm just thinking, when I was writing it, then I was thinking to myself that I wanted to kind of create with that song. I had in my head 90s R&B. I had in my head vocal groups. I like a lot of that, you know, vocal groups, female vocal groups from like 60s, 70s. And then I had kind of the 90s sound in my head. But then I also had in my head that the context of the song is kind of wanting someone to be like healthily, I have to say healthily, please, we have to put that in, healthily obsessed with you. So, because we don't need stalkerish vibes. We just, so it was that kind of idea that you wanted yourself on repeat. So that's where all of that fed in, and that's where it kind of I almost wanted it to be like that record kind of playing in someone else's head. And so that's where that came from. And it was slightly different when I wrote it. And then when I got into the studio, it was kind of like, okay, that's where I wanted to see it. My approach when it comes to like harmony is really, it's a case of what do I want to hear? Like I love harmony groups, and I've listened to people like the Winans, the Clark Sisters, and these are all close gospel harmony groups where you have women doing bass. And you have like, so in my head, I never think to myself, I can't do that note. I'm always thinking to myself, okay, what do I want? And so I always want to have the main kind of main line in there. I always want to have something that's slicing through that main line. I always want to have something undergirding it. And I think of it as building, almost building a house. So I want that kind of the main line, then I want something slicing through it. I want something undergirding it. I want something then supporting that. I want something which you're not expecting. I want warmth coming through it. And so I'm thinking of it like that. So I'm thinking, if I sing it against this, how warm will it be? Because I always want warmth. I feel like when you're listening to my voice, I want it to feel warm. I want it to feel like you kind of just get closeted in it. So on that song, I definitely wanted it to be like, I'm going to build it. So it reminds me of all the things that I love. But at the same time, it gives me that warmth and that kind of surprise. So if you kind of get to ever listen to the breakdown of the vocals on that, I've got myself, but then I've got my very good friend Senab, who is a natural alto but can do those bass notes as well, and she has a super warm voice. So between the two of us, we can build out probably basically anything. In so it's, yeah, that's how it all came together. And I always think of harmony as a build. So
are you sketching it out on piano and stuff, or are you just in the moment, building?
So that was sketched out on piano. But what I tend to do, and this is just me, I tend to do a cappella build outs.
Cool.
So if what I'll do is I'll go in, if I'm thinking to myself, I want to do all these harmonies and so on, I will go into my Pro Tools and I'll basically build everything out a cappella and have them on the different lines so I can see what works against each other. So I'll just sing down all of the different lines and then build it. So it's just, and I just want to hear vocals. I don't want to hear any instrumentation.
Totally.
And I guess for me, I can do that. I don't know. Other people have to have a piano, but if I hear the line in my head, I can sing everything on point.
Sorry to jump in, actually. I'm just curious, like when you're in these like pop sessions, and I don't know how much the arrangement you're doing with those vocals and stuff, or if you're just kind of recording a lot, or like you're given a part to record or whatever, but I don't know, something I've come up with, really I don't have a lot of experience with the backing vocal stuff, is like almost having too much and it making the mix or the arrangement too dense. Are you finding that you're doing this a cappella thing and then you're bringing in the instrumental and then you're pulling out layers to kind of free up space for the other instruments that are playing those kind of notes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like,
cool.
If left to me, I will have 57 harmonies. I will have, if left to me, it will be actually ridiculous. Like the session will be just a monster because I'm always hearing something. So I'm like, ooh. So I'm always hearing different things. So I always do end up pulling things out to make space for what really should be in there. And I think that is a skill that you learn as you go along, learning how to edit yourself. So you're actually putting into songs what it needs and what should be sitting in there, rather than every idea that you've ever had about harmony. Because for me, I love that. So I'm like, oh my God, today we're going to be like Brandy, who I believe is the vocal BV queen. I don't think anyone does it better. So I'm like, today we're going to try and be like Brandy. And it's like, no, we can't be Brandy on every song. Because like you said, it becomes too dense. But learning how to edit yourself, putting all the ideas down, great. But then learning that, okay, I put 20 down and probably 15 have to come out so that the song, you actually get the essence of the song as it should be. That's a skill in and of itself that you have to learn as you
the
go
restraint
along. Yeah.
That comes restraint
experience is a,
and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know about when, vocalists, a lot of us vocalists, me included, have to learn restraint.
Yeah.
Yeah. We throw everything at the wall, like, and think everything's going to stick, and it really, really doesn't. Yeah, some
things
just have to.
Well, we can't wait for the death metal a cappella album.
Oh, the death metal a cappella. I said before Christmas, but I think I'll get to you guys earlier so you can enjoy it for the summer.
Oh, this has been amazing. I'm going to hand you back to Chris as well. Have you got anything else? Yeah.
So thanks to Bastian and for those questions. Really, really insightful stuff, and as always. And thank you, Bim, for appearing on the Stage Left podcast. I mean, you've given us so much kind of transparency and so many kind of like interesting insights as to the real workings, the real mechanics of being a session musician. So thank you, so much for that kind of transparency and that openness. And we look forward to hearing what's next. We look forward to the death metal album that you're going to be putting out later this year.
Yes, coming out just before Christmas. Look out for it.
But listen, it's been so good listening to your thoughts on the music industry. And I just want to say thank you so much for being such a great guest on the Stage Left podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?